Jeffrey Beagle, concert pianist, composer, arranger, teacher, recording artist, short story writer, all-round musical tour de force. It's my pleasure to welcome you into our studios at KRWG.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I want to start right at the beginning. You began life deaf, I understand, and at three had some surgery that brought you into the world of sound. Just a remarkable way to begin the life of a musician. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
I do remember, well, the old black and white movies remember. No, I do remember just standing in front of these giant speaker boxes, you know, the old stereo speakers, you know, that took up half your living room. And I would just stand there. I do remember what the kind of sound I heard was, well, if you put your hands over your ears, that's what I heard. It wasn't clear. There was, the eardrums were not working properly. They weren't pumping properly. So sound was not clear. Sound was veiled. And then I guess I just went to the piano. It was there. My older sister played, and I imitated.
But you had some surgery that corrected the deafness.
Yes.
So then you started to speak and to really hear just from the age of three onward. And music was a part of your life from that moment onward.
Probably was before, because maybe all I could understand were the vibrations of sound from this, coming from those massive speaker boxes going through my feet. Mm. So, I mean, sound of music was probably my first language. I mean, I could understand some English, I suppose, whatever I could make out from what I was hearing. I also think that if I'm not hearing and speaking properly, I was extremely inhibited. And that took until late teens. In fact, the person you just heard playing Adele Marcus, she was very helpful in pulling me out of that world I was in. And I think that had a lot to do with why music and sound and color is extremely important to me. It's something I relate to more than speaking English, and how to get sound. And that's why Adele Marcus was so good for me, because she was the master of sound, and she probably sensed something in me. She didn't know much about that when I was studying with her. I never made a big deal about, oh, I couldn't hear when I was little. To me, it was my normal, so I didn't really think it would be so attractive for anybody else to know, until a journalist said, really? Oh, and then like a week later, the whole story came out in the newspapers, like, pianist born deaf. I was like, well, all right, maybe there's something to it, and it kind of contributes to why I do what I do. So.
Well, you anticipated my next question, which was going to be about Adele Marcus, a teacher that it seems to me has inspired a remarkable amount of devotion among her students. The recording that we heard was produced through a foundation that a number of students put together. I know you're on the list of her students in that CD. So I wanted to ask you about her influence on you. You've already answered it to some degree, but tell us just a little bit about this remarkable pianist and teacher at Juilliard.
Yeah, she had a career of her own way early on. She studied with Joseph Levine and Arthur Schnabel, went to Berlin, you know, and then when the war hit, she came back, assisted Joseph Levine for several years, and in 1954, the Juilliard School asked her to be on the faculty, and she just started churning out students. Some of the stars, like John Browning and Van Cliburn, they were going to her privately, saying, I need help with this piece, you know, and they were studying with Rosina Levine, who was wonderful, but they went to Adele also to seek out extra advice. And she had this sense of people. She had a sense of the music, of course, but she could play in a way that her sound was amazing, and she could teach you how to do it, which was remarkable. And how, the pedaling too, phrasing, singing. It's the first question I always ask students in math class: do you sing when you practice? You could always tell the sound by the singing quality. But as she didn't have her own children, so all of her students became her children, mm-hmm. and that was good and bad, because it was good when it was good and it was bad when it was bad. It's hard to, everybody has their own stories, of course, but she was a grand dame in that sense, where she really did take over many aspects of your life, because she knew what it took out there. She would say things like, better you should hear it from me, dear, than the critics next week, you know. She knew when you should or should not play certain pieces or go to competitions, or, you know. I once wanted to do a competition, and she says, oh dear, what's so great about being the best of the worst? You're not ready for that. You know, she just told you where it was at, because she knew how tough it was out there. And I wanted to enter. And she says, it was Rachmaninoff Third Concerto at Juilliard. She says, oh, you'll play it one day. Don't worry. 15 years later, I ended up playing it. But at the time, I was like, oh, you know, you know. But that was the growing pains. But I still have emails and chats with her former students. And, you know, we still feel like we're the kids, you know. Everybody shares stories, but I remember my parents just let it, they just put me in her hands, and they knew she was going to tell you realities, that you should learn it young on. But the days go, not a day goes by that I don't think about that influence. It's just a part of you, you know. It's like a parent figure. Mm-hmm. But she played beautifully.
You're also a composer and an arranger, and I noticed that a number of your compositions are choral works.
Yes.
So since you just mentioned singing, do you sing also?
Or No, I have a lousy voice. Sound like foghorn. You could tell from my speaking voice, that can't be a beautiful singing voice. But because of that, I translate what I wish I could do into what I write. No mercy on the tenors. Just no mercy on them. They're just, you know, green with envy here. I'm just, you're going to work for it. So I give them beautiful things to sing. My forte is really SATB, Debussy, double choir if I have to. Holiday things mostly.
When did you start composing?
I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
Kid, you know. And I started writing the choral things when I was 18, 19. And those were sacred works, psalms. You know? So I started with SATB Debussy, and then by the second one, I was already double choir.
Let me just say for our listeners, SATB is soprano, alto, tenor, bass.
Yes. And a cappella means no accompaniment. And so I've written the choral things, and I enjoy that. I enjoy arranging already known tunes. And then if I have to have them with piano, I do that. And then I'm not an orchestrator, so a friend of mine, Lucas Richmond, Knoxville Symphony conductor, he's also a wonderful composer and arranger, and he orchestrated Hanukkah Fantasy that I wrote, which has been getting some play. And a friend of mine in Shreveport, Kermit Poling, is a great violinist and also conductor and composer and arranger. He did Christmas in a Minute, the orchestration of that for me, which is Chopin's Minute Waltz for Christmas. So I enjoy writing when I can. It's not like a job, so it's not like I do it every day because I have to and I have to come up with some good things, but it's a hobby. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting for a couple of other pieces to see if they'll get published.
Okay, another thing I noticed in your biography, I should reintroduce you. This is Jeffrey Beagle that we're speaking with, pianist and soloist with the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra, that you you sometimes have a foot in the door of the pop world, and have played and are going to be playing some music of Neil Sedaka and also Billy Joel, I noticed, and then some of the great jazz composers that have become also part of the classical world, like Duke Ellington or George Gershwin. But tell us about the Neil Sedaka, which is coming up. There's a premiere that you're doing.
You did it.
Okay.
It was the premiere of my own piano arrangement of it based on Neil's original writings.
Manhattan Intermezzo.
Yeah. It goes back a bit. After I did this, the first concert on the internet, it was a live audio video thing. I kept it on my website, and I'd written some pop pieces. So Keith Emerson was a friend of mine because I play his piano concerto. I said, you know, Keith, how do I get this pop stuff to where? How do I do this? He says, well, mate, you got to get it to David Foster. I said, oh, that's like trying to see the Wizard of Oz. How do I do that? And I just went through, he says, try Atlantic. You know, go to Atlantic Records. And so I went to, found my way through the different offices and ended up at David's assistant in the studios in Malibu. And I faxed over my music, and my website still had my internet concert on it. Should never have taken that down. I can't find the video. And I get home one day, and there's a message on the machine. It says, hey, man, it's David Foster. You know, is that you playing on the internet? You know, if that's you, call me. Here's my cell. Here's my office. I'm just, wow. And I mean, I admire David for so many things, not just because he's a fine composer. He's a great producer. He's a great arranger. And he's got the David Foster Foundation, which is one of the greatest foundations to help young people and their families, the organ transplants. You got to look it up. It's really fascinating. So we became friends from that. I went out to L.A. and met him and played Christmas in a Minute for him because I thought he could do something with it. He actually was so close to using it on Barbra Streisand's Last Christmas CD. Hmm. He called her and I played it for her, and oh God, I was so scared. And I'm singing and with this horrible voice and playing this piece that is, you can't even take a breath in between them. It's the Minute Waltz. I mean, he's singing the Minute Waltz for Christmas. And David liked it. He says, I think she'll go for it. But she had already done the Minute Waltz years ago. Uh-huh. So, and she never does the song again, even if, you know, same idea. So I turned it into the SATB choral piece, and, you know, it has a life of its own. But so David and I stayed in touch over the years. I did a thing for Piano Disc, the Player Piano Company, called Best of David Foster. I took all his songs and made piano arrangements out of them. I really enjoyed doing that. And actually, the first time I was there, lo and behold, his phone rings. He goes in the office. He goes like this, it's Neil Sedaka. I said, oh my God. I said, tell Neil I'm here, because we both studied with Adele Marcus. Neil was one of Adele's top students, who was destined to be the next William Capel. Huh. Turns out he goes into the pop world and kind of left the classics. And Adele told me the story, how that all happened, of course. And then a few years went by, and I met up with Neil at a showcase that David had for one of his new singers, Renee Olstead, in the city. So Neil was there. I said, that's where we met. And we talked about Adele. We talked about everything. We didn't really stay in touch much. But then there was a big party about 3 years ago. David hosted a birthday party for himself, but mostly for Andrea Bocelli, when they did the PBS Tuscany special. So after they did the showing in Radio City, David had the party nearby, and you know, we were there. Neil was there. And you know, David said to me, you're playing. I'm like, oh, you tell me right before the party I'm going to play? I have nothing. You know, what do you do? Just play some Chopin, you know. You know, in his world, you should be able to sit down and do anything. And Neil did something. I played Chopin Polonaise. Bocelli sang. It was really like, whoa, Dancing with the Stars. It was really an amazing experience. But Neil came to me after and said, I loved your Chopin. And we started talking. And he says, you know, I'm just finishing a piano concerto. And I was like, really? He says, yeah, I went back to my roots, and can I let you know when it's done? I said, please. So last May, the phone rang, and we talked about it, and he says, well, you know, I wrote it, and I already did something with it in London, but, you know, I'd like to send it to you and see if you'd like to do something with it. So his assistant sent me the piano part and the score. Lee Holdridge did the orchestration, which is a lovely score. And I called him. I said, Neil, I love this. You know, I just hear so much in here. You know, it's like a life story of New York. The beginning sounds like the immigrants coming through Ellis Island, and it goes in through this whole panache of New York, and you have the Latino, you have the Chinatown, you have Broadway and ragtime, and it's wonderful. And I said to him, I love the piano part. Will you let me inject a few more notes? Just fill it out a little more. And he said, sure. And bring it to me. So I brought it to him, what I did, and he says, I love it. Do it that way. So I played that in Kentucky last September, and he and his wife, Liba, were there. And as a result, his relationship with Orchestra Kentucky took off, and they commissioned him to write an overture about Kentucky. And he'll be there for the premiere in September, and I'm playing Rhapsody in Blue on that program. So I'll see Neil again. He's a great friend. He's a brilliant man, and all those songs he wrote are just legendary, beautiful.
I'm speaking with Jeffrey Beagle, pianist and composer, as we heard, also an arranger and a teacher recording artist. And you're tuned to KRWG 90.7. Lonnie Klein is also with us, and this weekend, Jeffrey Beagle will be playing the Camille Saint-Saëns Piano Concerto No. 2 with the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra. Lonnie and Jeffrey, you can throw your two cents in, too, about the Saint-Saëns. And Lonnie, you're doing the Enigma variations of Elgar and some Rossini. Tell us a little bit about the concert. And
well, this is a program that that we've never done. Certainly the Enigma, the Saint-Saëns, and Semiramide, the Rossini. So it's challenging for the orchestra, and it's good for the audience. These are real staples of the repertoire. We're having a wonderful time. The Rossini is such a...
fun. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, it's so well written for the orchestra, and it's delightful and charming, and, you know, the color of the flute and the oboe and the clarinet and the solo violin. It's just delightful. And then, of course, the G minor, which is a wonderful concerto that we've not done before. And then we'll fill out the rest of the program with the Enigma variations. And I have to say, for me, it's really been a joy to learn the Elgar, which, for those that don't know, it's a set of four, it's a theme, a set of 14 variations, and it's based on characters and
people that Elgar knew.
Yeah, his wife, a poet, a musician, an amateur musician, a pianist. So every variation has a character, and the challenge becomes to make that character come to life. Well, one variation in particular is about a woman that he knew that had a speech problem. She stuttered. And so it's exemplified in the orchestra. And it's just charming music.
I like the dog barking.
And the dog barking.
That's
I love
in Vivaldi. The
and then we'll tear your heart out with Nimrod.
Yeah.
You know, that variation. So it's a wonderful program. And Jeffrey came recommended to me from a mutual friend of ours. Kevin Rhodes is a conductor of the Springfield Mass Symphony. And Kevin called me, 3 years ago and says, Lonnie, you've got to listen to this pianist. You've got to engage this pianist. And I said, what is his name? He says, Jeffrey Beagle. And I said, okay. So I really trust Kevin's judgment. We've done a lot of collaboration through the years, and it's just fantastic to have him out here in Las Cruces. I think your first visit here,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
He's been in El Paso. Yeah,
I've been in El Paso and in Albuquerque. So I kind of surrounded the area and then finally came in.
We've just got a couple minutes left. I should say the concerts are tomorrow night at 7:30, Sunday at 3 at the Atkinson Recital Hall. Jeffrey Beagle is the soloist, Lonnie Klein conducting the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra. We have just about a minute and a half left. Jeffrey Beagle, you want to say a few words about the Piano Concerto No. 2 of Saint-Saëns?
Very quickly, you know, if you know the... Have a listen to the Prelude in G Minor of Bach from Book 2. From the Preludes and Fugues, the Book 2 G minor. You'll hear that low G and then the counterpoint above it. This is what Saint-Saëns does in the opening. He has the pianist start first, and it's almost organ-like, but then it just turns into a beautiful French romantic piece, and the first movement is the lyrical movement, the slower movement, and followed by a scherzo second movement and a brilliant fast tarantella third. Keep in mind that Saint-Saëns played all 32 Beethoven piano sonatas by the age of 10.
By heart, I understand.
And then he goes to Franz Liszt and says, pick one. So, you know, you're dealing with a very gifted pianist and composer, and his music is really to entertain. And this is a really entertaining concerto. I loved studying it with Adele Marcus, and now I'm finally playing it. I've played it many times, but I mean, playing it now throughout my career, having studied it with her when I was
17. I can tell you, he takes the tarantella like the wind.
It's marked presto. That's a good tempo. That's actually the right tempo.
It's wonderful. And we agree on the character of the piece as well. There's a little beer drinking section in there.
Absolutely.
It's just so cool.
French beer.
French beer. Thank you to you both. Jeffrey Beagle, been a pleasure talking with you. And Lonnie Klein, as always.
Thank you.